Today's share is being sponsored by the Nishbas Sarah Henya, Bas Yosef HaKohen, and Shem HaShem Aliyah. Eschatai Ani Maski Hayom, the Mishnah in Pesachim that says the first year a person gets married, they're supposed to go to their wife's family to spend the first yantiv, because it's uncomfortable for them to, for her, the Kala, to go to the in-laws, uncomfortable to eat in front of them. For that reason, the first regel, the Mishnah says, should go to the wife's family. So the first year I got married, the first yantiv was Pesach, and logistics of this brother, that sister, we ended up going to my parents for the first yantiv, which happened to be Pesach. So there we were, my parents' house in Tinek. We had a nice new silver Seder plate as a wedding gift, and we went through the Seder, and it came for the time for eating matzah, moti matzah. So I took out my matzah, I split it, gave my wife some, had some for myself, and I had my shiur I would normally have. And then I looked to my wife, and she's still very, very comfortable eating in front of my parents, stuffing her face. I asked for shush to say the story. And, you know, she's looking at me like, why I stopped eating so soon? So she's nudging me to keep eating more. So I kept eating more and more, and my sister still says to this day she's never seen anybody eat so much matzah. And I'm stuffing my face, and then I've never been so full. And it comes for the meal, my wife, my mother made all this beautiful meat, which I had to, of course, eat my mom's meat. And by the time it came to Afikoman, I was vade over achila gasa, no question about it. So I asked my wife, "What's shot? Why'd you eat so much matzah?" "So what do you mean? That's what we do in my house. My brothers have the shirim, they weigh everything out, they have this amount, two kazesim." So the next year, everything made sense. So I went to my in-laws for the next year, Pesach. And the moment you took the matzah out, it just broke. They had the charedim, the thin as possible, the thin as paper, and I have the shatzer's matzah, which is thick as possible, so it was three times the size, so that explained everything for me. So I'd like to discuss exactly what is a shir kazayis, how to measure it. It's somewhat of a technical sugya, but I think there's something we could appreciate of the kazayisim, how much you're supposed to eat throughout Pesach. It's a very important sugya. So, firstly, how many kazayisim does one have to eat on Pesach night? So the Rush tells us in Pesachim that since we say two brachas, we say moti matzah and lechem naretz, moti lechem naretz, you have to have two kazayisim, mekol achas kazayis. So the Rush is somewhat unclear. He says you need to have from together, from both of them, a kazayis. So the Shulchan Aruch, the way the Shulchan Aruch records this, he says, b'yachad, he says, that yochlem b'haseba b'yachad kazayis mikol echad. So from the Rush, it sounds like maybe it's enough to have combined one kazayis, but the Shulchan Aruch displays it as you need one from each of them. You need two kazayisim for the first night of eating for the mechilas matzah. So what's the reason for this? So the reason is because the Mishnah Berurah says the only one you really need to have a kazayis for is for the bracha of achilas matzah. Because whenever you say the word achila, you need to have a achila, and achila is defined by the shear of a kazayis. But when you say moti lechem in haaretz, there's no mention of achila, so you don't need a kazayis from halechem moti lechem in haaretz. So you really only need one kazayis for the achilas matzah part. But the Mishnah Berurah goes on to explain, since we don't know which bracha is going on which part of the matzah, is achilas matzah going on the top matzah, is achilas matzah going on the second one? So since we don't know, you have to have a kazayis from both of these matzahs to be safe, to have the achilas matzah being chal. So therefore, that's where we get the halacha to have two kazayisim the first night of the Seder, and also, for that matter, the second night. But the first night might be a deraisa. Now, the Bar Halacha takes issue with this. The Bar Halacha says, I don't understand where he gets this from. The Rush seems to say this, not so clear in the Rush. If this is really the din that you need two kazayisim the first night, and the Gemara should have told us somewhere. The Gemara doesn't tell us anywhere at all about two kazayisim. In fact, the Gemara says, when you have a waiter who's helping you out for the Seder night, you're supposed to give him a kazayis. It doesn't say two kazayisim. You give him one kazayis, so he's yotzei mitzvah. So where in the world does the Shulchan Aruch get two kazayisim from? And the Bar Halacha in the end just says, I'm not really sure why we have to have this, but it's a tzarech iyun. Now, because it's a tzarech iyun, it's going to be very important for the end of the day how to measure the two kazayisim. So although the halacha is two kazayisim, it's somewhat weak. It's unfounded, really, based on the Mishnah Berurah, why we have two kazayisim. So it becomes a big issue. Many of the people have been telling me here and elsewhere that, at least in Europe, I wasn't there, obviously, but they used to just sit down at their meal, and the person leading the Suda would, the Seder, would take the matzah, break it up, and give everyone a little piece. And that was enough, and no one made a big deal how to measure it out. But Rav Moshe has this whole tshuva that he says he has a Masorah from his father, and he passed it on to his children, and he hopes his children will continue this Masorah, that you have to have, when you do all the math, one matzah is only able to have two kazayisim, rather. You split it in half, one kazayis, two kazayisim from one matzah. So if you have a large family, or even more than two people, you have a problem of how to give out enough kazayisim. So depending how many kazayisim you need two for the first achilas matzah, you need one for korech, According to some, you need another two for afikomen, so you need five kazesim for each person. So if you have three matzahs in the beginning and under your seder plate, so how are you going to split up three matzahs, which at most is going to be six kazesim? You need to get five for yourself. So even if you want to say you have three for yourself, you're going to take a more makel printing. You know, only need three kazesim. So you have six kazesim and your three matzahs, two in each matzah, that's six. So you have three for yourself and three for your wife. What do your children do? So he says the minhag that he had from his father was that each child, each son, should have their own set of matzahs in front of them. And they could split up. And then their twin sister, the sister should join up with their brother. So you have each a couple, the brother and the sister together with their own matzah, another brother and sister. If you have only a daughter, so then you have the daughters. Make sure the daughters have their own set of matzahs in front of them. And the ketanim, if they're able to eat a kazayis, let the ketanim have their own set of matzahs. But there should be enough on the seder plate to go around for everyone to have their own set of matzah, own kazayis, to mekayim the mitzvahs of matzah. So, initially I would say this is not the minhag ha'olam. But I really only know what goes on in my own house. When it comes to seder, everyone thinks what goes on in their house is the minhag ha'olam. But unless you go to a hotel, you have no idea what else goes on in any other family. So that's why Pesach is the hardest for two families. So when people get married, everyone has different minhagim. So why this family reads everything out loud, this family reads everything quietly, they go fast, they go slow, they sing these songs. It's always the biggest issue because everyone thinks what goes on in their house is what goes on in every house. So I don't know if that's a minhag olam. It wasn't my minhag in my parents' house. So I know in my parents and my in-laws' house, we follow what goes on in the Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah Paskin, based on the Shemir Shabbos, that all you have to do is have one set of matzahs for the guy, the Baal Hasid, the Baal Haggadah. And he gives a little piece of matzah for everyone sitting at the table. And then they go get from the box all the cracked matzahs that we get. They fill up to get their kazayis. And that's what we did growing up. That's what my in-laws do. I imagine many others do that as well. But Ramosha has his minug, and he passed it on. He hopes his children will continue that. And whoever has that minug, it seems to be a very good minug as well. But that's how you get the two kazayis. But now we have to figure out how do we measure what exactly is considered a kazayis. So Ramosha already alluded to us that each matzah is split into two. Each matzah gets two kazesim. So let's figure out how Ramosha actually got to that amount. We'll get to what type of matzah, thin versus thick. All these things are very, very relevant. Square, right. I'm not going to deal with machine, but that's also a different shear, you're right. So it seems pretty easy. How do you measure a kazayis? Well, the Mishnah Kalim tells us, number 7, kazayis she'amru lo gadol v'lo katan el benoni. It's not too big, it's not too small. Just find an average kazayis. So you go to your local grocery store or find the FDA approved, they have different measurements, and you find the average olive size and take olive size and crush up some matzah and then make sure they look pretty similar, and there you have your kazayis. The difficulty with that is the Yamsha Shlomo tells us that number 8, that the peros and shivas haminim in Eretz Yisrael, one of them being a zayis, was overgrown and because it was the shivas haminim. And after time, after the Gullus and the Korban Beis HaMikdash, the shirum, the size of these fruits, have shrunk. So the kazayis that we have is not the same size of kazayis they had back then. And we can't really measure it. And his proof is, based on the Tosas we'll see shortly, we have another equation. That one egg size, really a half an egg, equals one olive. I wanted to bring in some demonstrations, but I ran out of time this past week. But if you take an egg and you take an olive, then olive is not going to be half the size of an egg. It turns out to be like 1/15 of an egg size. So something has obviously changed. So it says that Yamsha Shlomo must be that the olive shrunk, because an olive was something unique to Eretz Yisrael, or one of the Shivas Haminim. So the olive shrunk was one of the klalos, the mission, the end of Sota talks about. We lost the Peros Haginoster, the Peros Eretz Yisrael lost its sweetness, lost its size. So the olive shrunk. So now how are we supposed to figure out what an olive is, or the olive size, if their olives are no longer good enough or big enough to give us the size of a kazayis? So thank God we have other Gemaras that have other equations. I know it's going to be somewhat technical, but I don't think it's very heavy math. Just bear with me. So if you look in the Gemara, the Tosos in Ervin and elsewhere combines two Gemaras which seem to say two different things, but it's really just a simple equation. The Gemara in Maseches Yuma Daf Pei Amud Aleph, number 9, says that the Shiaru Chachamim measured Ein Beis Ablia, the throat, the house that swallows literally, but the throat, Ein Beis Ablia Machzik Yosem Mibetas Tarnagolas. It only has the ability, the size of a throat could take an egg size. Yet there's a Gemara in Krisus Daf Yudal which says, Ein Beis Ablia Machzik Yoser Mishnei Zesim. So is it two Zesim or is it one Kebetza? And it's a very simple equation. Well, they're the same. One Beitza equals two Zesim, or one Kazayis equals half an egg size. And this is the Shita of the Tosos. Shita's Tosos is that to find out the size of an olive is to find the size of an egg. Take an egg, split it in half, and there you have the size of what was an olive back then, and that's your shear of a Kazayis. The Rambam, based on other Gemaras connecting it to Eruvin, without going into those great details, it comes out from the Rambam that it's one-third of an egg. An olive size is one-third of the size of an egg, and that's how the Rambam passes. So we're left right now with two opinions. Machlokas, Tosas, the Rambam. How big is an olive? Is it either a half an egg, or is it a third of an egg?
How big is an egg, though? Meaning there's the eggland best, a lot of very big eggs, and there's small eggs also.
Right. Very good. So here, too, also, Rav Moshe assumes that, just like the different grades, you have to take the average egg. I'm not sure there's like jumbo, I don't know the different eggs. But if you go there, I think there are five grades of eggs. The third grade, the middle one, that's the egg that we should be using. There's also machlokas whether you have to include the shell along with the egg or not the shell. That's another machlokas on whether that's included. Very good. So we're going to get to that also. Very good. So before we get to that point, we're going to assume at this stage that the egg is the same size as the egg they used to have. So all you have to do is take an egg and cut it in half for the tosos or cut it in a third according to the Rambam. So now that you have an egg, well, how do I match that up with a matzah? Matzahs are flat and eggs are big into circles, an oval. How do you match the two of them? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us a very simple, I also wanted to bring in like a beaker of some measurements and put some water in for displacement. But again, I ran out of time. So the Shulchan Aruch tells us very simply, you fill up a thing of water and then remove it. And then put a egg in and then put water back in and you see how much it rose. I guess he didn't have access to like little lines that we have on our beakers. You just put water in, drop the egg and see the water displacement. Very simply, you have your volume, how much you need, and then you crush up matzah and you put it into another fluid ounce cup and you figure out how much volume of matzah you get. Very simple. And that's what Rav Pinchas Bonder has this beautiful sefer on, it's called Halachas of Kazayas, beautiful pictures here. And I printed out, people were complaining that the Maror Mekoneh were a little too long, so I kept to the 7 pages, but I have a nice picture here for those who want to see the picture. And he writes, his basis for figuring out the different shiurim of Kazayasim was based on this water displacement. And I'll read it inside. All products in this section were measured under laboratory conditions using the displacement of water method to determine their volume. Items that could possibly absorb water were waterproofed prior to testing. And he goes on to explain, based on the University of Kansas, they figured out how to use water displacement of foods. Because if you put challah in the water displacement, the challah is going to absorb it. It's going to get an incorrect displacement. So they somehow sealed it in a way to get the proper water displacement. So based on that, he has this beautiful sefer and figures out how many jelly beans do you have to have a kazayas. So I'm not sure, I'm not anyone to say this, but I'm not sure if it was Ratzon Hashem for us to walk around with one of these and to know how much we ate, whether it's a kazayas or a kibetza. But at the same time, it gives you an idea how much you would think a kibetza or kazayas would be. So for example, we used to play this game in my house. We'd open up to a random page and I'd say to my kids, how many Twizzler bites do you think it takes to get a kazayas? Any guesses? 17. How many the Twizzler nibs does it take to get to a kazayas? How many? 30. So it's complete. It's so what? Right there, you have actual. I'm not sure the actual size here or not. I don't know. I'd say jelly beans. They're like mini, small, regular sized jelly beans. So like the mini jelly beans are 37. The regular sized jelly beans are 12. So it's impossible to really know just by looking at a food how big, how much you're going to get a kazayas. So after reading this book, you get somewhat familiar, but again, I don't think the idea is to walk around with a handbook wherever you go to eat with the restaurants with this book, but you do get some idea. It's not so clear what a kazayas is based on this book. That's the idea. Now, the problem with this is there's a Gemara Pesachim that tells us that there's another way to measure a kazayas or a kibetz, or really a reviz. And that's a Gemara Pesachim Daf Kuf Tes, number 15. The Gemara tells us that Rav Chista said that a revis, shel Torah, which of course impacts many areas of halacha, revis is a shear in volume, which impacts liquids. The way you measure revis is etzbayim al etzbayim, 2 fingers by 2 fingers, we're creating a cube here, 2 by 2, birom etzbam, with the height of another 2 fingers, and a chatzi etzba, a half a finger, which is 0.5, plus another chomesh, which is another 0.2, that gives you 2 times 2 times 2.7, which doing the math is 10.8 etzbos. You have to measure your finger size, 10.8 finger sizes, that's going to get you the volume of a reviz. Okay? Now, doing some other Gemaras and Rambams, it turns out that 1 kibetza equals 2/3 of a reviz. So you figure out, based on measuring your fingers, you figure out what a reviz is. Take 2/3 of that, you have a kibetza. Now you have your egg, so you do a half of that or a third of that to get your kazayas. So that's another equation. So one would think that would get to the same result as just measuring an actual volume. So the Tzlach went ahead and did the math. He writes in number 17, since the chaviva mitzvah b'shaita, I want to perform the mitzvah, and b'lai lezeh, we need a kazayis matzah and maror and Galakot says, I want to do the math, because these are mitzvahs deraisa that we're performing this night. Let me do the math. So he took an egg and dropped in the water displacement and got a certain shear, and he did the finger sizes and got a completely different shear. And it wasn't completely different. It was that the finger shears, or what we'll call the thumb shear, because the thumb are the fattest ones. So we use the thumb thumbs to measure the finger shear. So it turns out that the thumb method had almost double the size of the eggs he had. He dropped the eggs in, it came out to, let's say, 2.9 fluid ounces, and he did the thumb method, he had 5.1, which is not quite double, but it's a lot more than the thumb method. So what do? Do you use the egg, which is a smaller shear, or do you use the thumb method, which is a larger shear? That was his problem. So he writes very interestingly. If you look in the bold around halfway down the tzlach, he says, V'yadua, she'adoros holchin mismatin. We know that generations, we get weaker as we go further from Kabbalah Satorah. V'yefshar she'agadol shelanu gadol yos. It's impossible that we got bigger. And this line is typically meant that in terms of ruchness and ability to understand, but even thought physically, we're not going to get, thumbs can't get larger, so our thumbs must stay the same. It must have been the eggs that shrunk. So the eggs are no longer a way to measure the kezias. We throw the eggs out the window, and you have to use your thumbs to measure out what exactly is a kezias. So you measure your thumb, 2 times 2 times 2.8, and 2.7 rather, and then you get to the measurement of revis, times 2 and thirds, and you get half of that, you get your kezias. So the problem with this is a number of things. Firstly, his Talmud wrote a tshuva me'ava. He says, Noda Yehuda apparently was somewhat of a larger individual, in the nicest way. And his thumb sizes were not the average thumb size. His thumb sizes were 2.55. That's why he got double the shear. But the average thumb size is 2 centimeters. I know we use the inches, but a lot of them use centimeters. So I measure my thumbs. I didn't bring a ruler, but my thumbs at least are 2 centimeters. And you're doing that math, 2 times 2 times 2.7 of 2 centimeters, you get almost exactly the same size of the eggs that exist, the average egg. So nothing, there's no problem out here. And apparently the Tshuva Me'ava said, he reports in this very same Tshuva, he told the Tzlach, he did the measurement. And I said, I think Rebbe, your thumbs were just not the average size. So apparently the Tzlach laughed at him and smiled and nodded his head. And he took that to mean that he was Moda. He was Moda, Tzlach was Moda, that's true. But it wasn't recorded that way. So unclear whether the Tzlach was, he retracted on what he said or not. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that it's very possible that the egg shrunk. The different Medinos have different size eggs, so maybe the egg size that Noda Yehuda was using was smaller than the average egg size. So maybe his math wasn't correct. Ramosha says, who says that the eggs shrunk? Maybe the eggs got larger. Maybe the people's thumbs did get larger. So for a number of reasons, they point out that it's not so clear that Tzlach's calculations were 100% right, and we don't have to necessarily be machmir to double the size of any egg, and to use a thumb method of his. Others even say that, even if you want to say that the egg sizes shrunk or the thumbs got bigger or thumbs got smaller, we don't go based on what happened back then. We go based on in our generation. So we have to look what we have, and our eggs are this size, our thumbs are this size, and we just measure what we have now. We can't try to figure out what happened back then. So these are a number of the reasons why people reject the Tzlach. So again, to review before we go to some of the Halacha L'maaseh, there are two ways to measure the egg or the kezias that we want. So we need to know what an egg size is. So either you can measure an egg size by an actual egg, or you can measure an egg size by the thumb method, which will also get you to an egg with a number of other equations. Then, once we have the egg, does a kezias equal a half of that egg, or does a kezias equal a third of that egg? Those are the two sveikos that we have. So given that, the Mishnah Berurah paskins number 21. The Mishnah Berurah writes, L'inyan dina v'mitzvah deraisa. When it comes to din deraisa, once we very machmir lechel al kopanim kechatsi beta. Take the largest shear of an egg, which is half an egg. And then he says, in respect to maror, even though maror is only midirbanon, yesh lismoch b'diavad im achal kishlish beta. One can b'diavad rely on a third of an egg for maror. This is midirbanon achlich achila kevin shitzarch levarch al hamara nira dein lakev. But since you have to say achilas maror and you mention achila in the bracha, you should really have a half kibetza for the mara as well. So the Mishnah Berurah paskins, for Dine Deraisa you need a half an egg, for Dine Derbanan you need a third of an egg. How do you measure the half? How do you measure the third? So then you jump down a few paragraphs in the Mishnah Berurah. He explained that when it comes to Dine Deraisa, you should use the larger shear of the thumb method, and when it comes to Dine Derbanan, you should use the displacement method, the smaller shear for Dine Derbanan. So for matzah, you have to take the half an egg, measure by the thumb method, the largest shear. And for something, let's say, korech or afikomen, which is midrabanan, you could use the third of an egg using the actual displacement method with the egg. The Chazon Ish paskins that we always use a third across the board. It's always a third. He wasn't so into the tzlachs doubling up of the measurements, but he still said when it comes to Dina Deraisa, you should use the thumb method, and when it comes to Dina Derabanan, you could use the displacement method. I know it's a little bit confusing now. We're going to get to a final result. I'm just trying to lay out the different shitas right now. And Rav Chaim Na'a said, just like the Talmud of the Noda Behuda, everything works out perfectly. If you take 2 centimeter thumb widths, you do the math, you get the same exact result as using an actual egg. And so for that reason, he says, it doesn't make a difference which one you use. Whether you use your thumbs, whether you use an egg, it's going to be the same results. But you should still use the half an egg, the largest shear, for both Mrs. Deraisa and Mrs. Midirabanan. So there is still yet another equation that has to throw into here, making it a little bit more confusing. And that's because of a number of different calculations that fingers equal revis equals a kabeitza. There's also the size of an amma. An amma from the elbow to the finger, according to Rashi and Ervin. The size of it, that's why the middle finger is called an amma, because you measure from the elbow to the middle finger. That's an amma. So based on amma, if you know how big an amma is, so it ends up getting to another result of what a kabeitz is. So for some reason, all the achron have a different shear. If you actually measure our amma from the elbow to the middle finger, it will become much less than what we actually use. But the Chazon Ish used a certain shear that he had in Europe, which was 22.6 inches, 58 centimeters. And based on those numbers, he got a certain result, much bigger than using the actual egg. But Moshe had a smaller shear of 21.25 inches to get his result slightly smaller. So based on all these different calculations, we have this final chart that appears on page number 7. The final chart, just to have it somewhat clear to us what we're dealing with. Up until now, again, we tried to figure out how we got to these results. Now here are the results. So if you look down, let's go to the most left column. We'll start with that one. The shear of David Feinstein, which is from his father, Rav Moshe. Lefi medidas habeitza. Using an egg as a water displacement method, we'll just look at the top line. 2.9 fluid ounces. But when you use a thumb method, that's the next column over. Shitas Rav David Feinstein, lefi medidas haetzba. Using the thumbs, you get a slightly larger result, 4.42 fluid ounces. You go over one more column, Shitas Rav Chaim Na'a, who's also a big, big posek in Shirum. He allows Sfarim back and forth, him and Chazon Ish and the Stipler, tons of Sfarim about Shirum. He said, it's no difference. As we said before, whether you use a thumb or whether you use an actual egg, you're going to get the same result. That's the 2.9 fluid ounces, which equals the 2.9 fluid ounces that Rav Moshe had when you actually measure an egg. And finally, Chazon Ish, who used the largest shear, because he has the large shear of what an amma is, and doing all those calculations, he resulted in a 5.1 fluid ounces. Those are the final results. So what does that mean for us now? So there are some shitas. One of these Sfarim I have, and some briskers, maybe even some Sfaradim I was told, are very machmir in getting the exact shear. And some say you should have the most machmir shear, and the most exact way to get, how do you get from a volume? These shear are in volume. Fluid ounces is volume. How do you get from volume to actual matzah? So some suggest the weight. Weight is the best way to get the volume. Why? If you have volume, you need 5.1 fluid ounces for the Chazon Ish, for example. So you multiply that by density. Density is volume over weight. If you multiply that out, you've isolated now weight. So now you weigh matzah, just break up the matzah, weigh it beforehand, and you have bags of matzah you give out to everyone before the Seder. My brother-in-laws do this. I tried this one year, and I'll never do it again. It's very time-consuming. I'm not sure if this was Ratzon Hashem either, but you sit there. This is the most exact way to get the exact shear. The other way is have a posek tell you exactly what is a shear of matzah, and then just give out that matzah at the Seder instead of having to measure, instead of having to weigh things out. So I spoke to Rebbe Erev Shabbos, and the Rebbe said his sock is that half, if I'm saying correctly, around half a matzah is the shear of a kezias. And if it's a thinner one, it should be a little bit more than half a matzah. Is that correct?
Could be for kezias, for the two kezias ones by Achilas Matzah, and they were matzah by Afikomen, so those are the two kezias. So if the two kezias somewhere between a half and an entire matzah, and for the single kezias, of Karech, it's enough to use between a quarter and a half of a matzah. That's how it was done. After speaking to many of the more of the chassidish posts, that's how it was done.
Okay. So in terms of that, let's say two kezesim. So we said in the beginning, the Shulchan Aruch said you have to have two kezesim for achiyas matzah. So if one kezias is half a matzah, Moshe have, that means you have to have a whole matzah for achiyas matzah, which is a lot. So Moshe writes, and Chazon Ish agrees to this, and based on the Be'er Lachosa, that the need for two kezesim in the first place is very unfounded in the Rishonim. The Rush seems to indicate it, but since that's been the case, we can rely on a much smaller shear. Use a smaller shear of kazesim. So those small shear kazesim, let's say, for example, let's say for the Chazanish. So the smallest shear out there is the 2.9 of Moshe Feinstein. So you double that up, that's going to equal the largest shear. So all you have to do is really take one shear of kazayis, that's going to be yotzei, the two smaller shear of kazesim, and it'll be yotzei that way. So you don't have to have two full matzahs, or even one full matzah. You just, as Rebbe said, whatever the portion is, half, a little more than half, a little less than half. And also keep in mind how thick, how thin your matzah is. It's not so exact. There's no exact, it can be exact if you really want to. But I'm not sure if that was Ratzon Hashem to be so exact, to get the shear kazayis. But again, somewhere Rebbe said a half, a little less, a little more. And that's the idea. Now, I was thinking, this is quite an interesting evolution of shirum of measurements over the course of time. We started off with matzah being measured by an actual kazayis, an actual olive, which made things very simple. And as the Yamcha Shalom pointed out, after time, after the Churban, after Gullus, the kazesim got smaller, and we had to resort to be using the kibetza now. And then, even further, the kibetza was no longer good enough, so we had to start using our own fingers and etzbos to figure out the shirum. So I was trying to figure out what exactly is meant by this. So I found in Sefer the Rebbe lent over to me that said that the shir kazayis and shir kibetza are the most extreme shirum that we have in Achila. Kazayis is the smallest shear that we have in Achila. The smallest amount that you ever find in Halacha is a kazayis. And the largest shear that you ever have to eat is a kibetza. Those are the most extremes. Kazayis being the smallest, kibetza being the largest. And the Sefer pointed out that in the Sfarim HaKadoshim, they point out that the kazayis is connected the highest level of spheros, which would be the center, which would be the core of all the spheros. And the kibetza is the largest shear, is the most outer sphere, the crust of the circles, which would be the furthest sphere, which would be the Malchus. So perhaps we could suggest as follows. Times of the base of Migdash and before, we were able to use a kazayis because we were in the center, we were the highest level of the spheros. As we fell further with the destruction of the base of Migdash and Gullus, we fell further. Not that the kazayis got any smaller, because the kazayis remained the same, but we got more distant, so the kazayis appeared to be smaller to us because we were more distant, and we were only able to view the kazayis through the prism of the Malchus, which we found ourselves in. So we find ourselves in the Malchus and the Kibetza, which is the Malchus, the most outer shell. We have to use the Kibetza in order to measure the Kazayis. Yet as we fell further from Kabbalah Satorah, then we fell outside the world of Spheros, now we're in the Olam HaShuffle, where we are right now, in this world, and we had to resort to using our own selves, our bodies, the fingers, the furthest from the body, the Etzbos. So at first glance, that seems somewhat depressing as a reminder of how far we've fallen. But at the same time, I think it's quite empowering and charges us with a certain ability and responsibility how much we could accomplish. You know, we eat the matzah with our bare hands, we eat the kazayis with our fingers, and I think this is meant to remind us of the ultimate gula that we're able to bring. The very same hands, fingers that we built the cities of Mitzrayim with are the very same hands that we're going to build ultimately Bayis Shlishi with. It's a machlokas how Bayis Shlishi is going to come into this world. Rashi writes it's going to come down in Mishmaim. The Rambam writes it's that we're going to build. So they're both true, perhaps. That maybe we're going to start the building on our own, like Rambam says, and then eventually Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring Bayis Shlishi in the Shemaim. That's what all Mitzrayim is about. All Gulas Mitzrayim, even though we spoke about last week that the Gula of Mitzrayim is all Min HaShemayim, Nisim V'Neflos, every Makkah was only started by men. Moshe and Aaron hitting the water, hitting the stick. It was only, we started the product. We pressed the button. We did the Ashtalis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu completed it. So we have to start even the Nisim V'Neflos. And when the Mitzrayim realized it was Etzbe Elokim, maybe he was saying it was the Etzbe of Aaron was Etzbe Elokim. The fingers are Etzbe Elokim. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have an etzba. It was Etzbe Elokim, that Aaron's hand, when he put his finger on the button and pressed the button, that was Etzbe Elokim. That's what Mitzrayim is about, realizing that we have the power in our hands, in our fingers, to accomplish all these things. Perhaps this is the whole idea of a kazayis, that the fact that we can measure using our fingers are what's being, the etzbos are what's being used to measure all the kazayisim now, that's the idea. We are bringing the gula through our fingers, through our Etzbe Elokim. I think it's a Baal Tanya, the Rebbe always quotes, that at the end of the days, the Ikra Avod is Maisim Tovim, particularly, I think, Tzedakah. And giving Tzedakah with our own actions, our own fingers, is Etzbe Elokim. That's how we bring the Gula. And I saw the Chaban write that when you give Tzedakah, it's actually Shem Hashem. The Pruta, the penny, the quarter that goes in your hand is the Yud. And it's in your hand, that's the Hey. and you extend your hand, that's the vav, and you put it in the ani's hand, that's the hey. That's the yudke vavke. When you're giving tzedakah, which the Baal Tanya says at the end of days, that's etz belokim, that's yudke vavke, that's shem Hashem. Your hands, your fingers, are turning into the etz belokim. The Shulchan Aruch paskins based on the Tosos and Brachos, the Aslam and Chesman Beis, that you're supposed to put 10 fingers on the bread when you make hamotzi. It's based on how many words are in the bracha, how many words in different psukim. But maybe the idea is that the 10 fingers that we built, we created, we baked from beginning to end, we made this challah with our 10 fingers, we created something. We did Ma'aseh Elokim with our own etzbaos. Rav Soloveitchik has this beautiful idea. He asks, why only by bread? Why is bread the only food that requires benching afterwards? Not by apples, not by fruit. Because when it comes to bread, we do everything. We plant, we plow, we reap, we harvest, we thresh, we separate, we sift, we knead, we bake. From beginning to end, we do everything. And we think we did everything. And we seem to forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. It couldn't happen without HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we have to be stopped and say, wait a second. You did a lot, but you were partnered with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He gave you the ability to do this. When it comes to an apple, you take an apple off the tree, you see the hand of Yad Hashem is there. It's ready to be eaten, no other necessary preparations. When it comes to bread, so where we're so involved, we're supposed to be involved, at the same time, you could forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence. So when it comes to bread, dafka, we put our 10 etzbaos that we did make this. We had the etz belokim, we had the ability to create things. So perhaps that's the idea that in Leil Seder, when we pick up the matzah with our 10 fingers, which are meant to remind us of etz belokim, we pick up the kezias, which now through the etzbaos, we could envision what a kezias is. We're further away, but now we're even in a greater position where we could create the kezias, we could see the kezias through our etzbaos. So Mirz Hashem, through that, these kavanos, we should be zocha to build a bai shlishi with our own etzbaos, with our own hands, and a kadosh baruch ultimately bring the bai shlishi min hashemayim.
Really, it's connected to what Rabbi Levin, the end of what Rabbi Levin was saying, which I'm going to pick up on a little bit. The first halacha in Hilchas Pesach, when you look in Shulchan Aruch, the first, at the very beginning of the Ramah, the first halacha, which means our way of entering into Kedushas Yontif, is the minug of Maos Chitim. Of providing for the matzahs for the poor. It's the beginning. Which is interesting because that's also the way that we begin the Haggadah. Right, with Holachmanya begins. Everything begins with giving and worrying about the other. The question is that when we look in the Rambam in Hilchas Yontif and Perek Vav, and we look at Shulchan Aruch and Hilchas Tzedakah, it's very clear that providing for poor people and making sure that they have what they need for Yontif, that's something that's required by that's a requirement of the entire year and for Shabbos and for every yontiv. So the question is, what's uniquely Pesachic about this? Why is this halach in Hilchas Pesach? It's not only halach; it's the beginning of Hilchas Pesach. We always have to help the poor. By every holiday, by every yontiv, we have to help the poor. When you look at the Mishnah Berurah says a very simple thing. He says Pesach is the most expensive yontiv. We always have to help, but Pesach, you have to really work harder to take care of things because it's a huge expense. And therefore, because of that expense, there's an additional requirement to look out for the needy. The Shevet Musa says another point, fascinating point, and he says that because the whole Gula took place in such a way where we were impoverished slaves, and Hashem had Rachmanis on us, and he took us out from that state of having nothing, And then we received the Rechush Gadol, we received all of the riches of Mitzrayim. So the Shevet Musa says that there's a particular chiyuv when it comes to Pesach. All yontivs, we have to help the poor, but especially when it comes to Pesach, we experienced that ourselves, that we were impoverished, and then we received Rechush Gadol. So particularly by Pesach, the Shevet Musa says that there's such a requirement. There's a fascinating ha'or that's made by the Gra. The Gra sees this minug in the Chumash itself. It says in Pasuk, Shivas Yomim Tochal Matzos. Now Matzos is written without a vav. Shivas Yomim Tochal Matzos. Obiyam HaShvichag LaShem. And then it says again, the Gra asks why. It says, Matzos with a vav. Matzos Ye'ochel Es Shivas Yomim. So a couple of problems with the Pasuk. Why Matzos first without a vav, and then Matzos with a vav? Why Bechlal repeat eating matzahs 7 days? It says at the beginning, Shivas Yom Tochal Matzahs. Why again? Matzahs Yochel Shivas Yom. Then the girl also asks, why does it say first Shivas Yom Tochal, you shall eat, and then it says Ye Ochel, it shall be eaten. So the Gros says a brilliant thing. That's why he was the Gros. He said, the Gros says that the first part of the pasuk is referring to the requirement of the person himself. Matzos, where it says in the pasuk, Shivas Yom Tochal Matzos, it means it's on the person himself that you have to eat matzos for the entire yontif. The end of the pasuk, he says, is a hint to the mitzvah of providing matzos for others. That's why it says, Ye Ochel, you have to see to it that matzos will be eaten. That means you have to take care of others to make sure that they will have matzos to eat. And that's why the first time where it's written matzos, which is referring to your own mitzvah, it's written without a vav. And then when it's referring to making sure my matzos Ye Ochel, that the matzos will be eaten by the poor, there is with a vav, and the Gros says, because when it comes to your own matzahs, just have enough to eat, the kezaisim that you need. But when it comes to taking care of the poor, make sure to add on. That's why there's the vav, that it's written mole, make sure that they have more, dai v'hoiser, to give extra for the needs of the poor. Al kaponim, it's a minig, and the lashon of the Ramah, is uminhag liknas, the first halach in Hilchos Pesach. Uminhag liknos chitin lechalkon la'aniyim letzorach Pesach. It's a minig to buy the chitim, to actually distribute, to give out the chitim. The question of is giving money the same thing? Nowadays we don't give out the chitim that they should be able to bake matzahs. That's a discussion we're not going to get into right now. Certainly, we could be yotze with the money itself, but minhag liknos chitim lechalkon la'aniyim letzorach Pesach. V'kol mi shadar bi'ir yud beis chodesh tzorach liten lazet. It's a very important point. The Ramah says that anybody who's living in a city for 12 months is chayiv to pay this money, to give this money for mos chitim. Anybody who's in a kehila for 12 months is chayiv this minhag of mos chitim. The Magen Avraham adds on that also any poor person, any poor individual who's living in that city, in that town, in that kehila for 12 months, he is able to benefit from that mos chitim. So you're chayiv to give the mos chitim if you're living in a place for 12 months, to give that to the kehila to distribute, to the rav for the kehila to distribute. And any poor person who's living there, not just somebody who's passing by, but a poor person who's there for 12 months. Is somebody who is worthy of receiving, who's able to receive that the mos chitim. Now, even though l'chayra the minig is a minig that comes from hilchas tzedakah, it's a din in hilchas tzedakah. What's interesting is if it's hilchas tzedakah, it really doesn't belong at the beginning of hilchas Pesach. Where would it belong? Where does it belong? It would belong in Yerdei in hilchas tzedakah. It's a regular din in tzedakah. It belongs in hilchas tzedakah. Hilchas tzedakah is in Yerdeya. It's not in Eruch Haim. And if it's a matter of, well, it's talking about matzahs and the arba kaisis that you have to provide for people, so that's a din in hilchas tzedakah in Yerdeya. They mechzer ashiach silo, that whatever person needs, you try to provide. You try to give the person whatever he needs. So there's something that seems to be particularly pesachdik about this halacha. Otherwise, it would just be a din in hilchas tzedakah. And that's why the Makor Chaim brings down, the author of Makor Chaim is the Chavis Yoyer. He writes, the Makor Chaim writes that the minig of Mos Chitim is not a halacha in Hilchos Tzedakah. And the proof, one of the proofs that he brings is that when you look in Hilchos Tzedakah, if you go to Yerideya, we don't find there a shear of Yud Beis Chodesh, of somebody being in a place, he has to be there for 12 months to get tzedakah. There's a discussion of Shloshim Yom, 30 days. There's a view that holds Shloshim Chodeshim, 3 months. Yud Beis Chodesh is, we don't find that number in Hilchus Tzedakah, not as far as somebody who's obligated to give, and not as far as somebody who's a candidate to receive. Therefore, The Makor Chaim brings the Yushalmi. The Yushalmi has the minig of Mos Chitim. And in the Yushalmi, what comes out quite clear from the Yushalmi is that Mos Chitim is not a halacha, a regular halacha in Hilchas Tzedakah, or it's at least not entirely a halacha in Hilchas Tzedakah, but rather it's a mas. It's a tax. It's a community tax. Now, as far as taxes are concerned, in other words, the kehila charges a tax of all the members of the kehila. That's how it took place in Europe. you don't have to look in history books. You can speak to Jews who, Baruch Hashem, are still alive. My father told me that every family was assessed and there was a tax, and the Gabbai came around to every single family and they had to go to the office of the Kehillah before Pesach. It was a couple of, it was from really after Purim to Rosh Chodesh in earnest, that this tax was being paid and every family was assessed and they had to pay a tax. It's a mass, it's a tax that was collected by the Kehillah. Now, when we're talking about a tax there, when you look in Chesh Mishpat, now we're moving from Yeridei to Chesh Mishpat. In Chesh Mishpat, Simon Kuf Samach Gimel, there we find that Yud Beis Chodesh, when somebody lives in a place for 12 months, then he's obligated to pay the taxes of that Kehillah, whatever the taxes are, not just for most Chitim, but every Kehillah had certain taxes to upkeep the shul and the mikveh and so on, and the schools. So there, that's a halach in Chesh Mishpat. That's really a halach in taxation. With taxes, there we find the shear of Yud Beis Chodesh. Rav Zsolti, Olav Shalom, in Mishnas Yaivitz, has a very famous piece regarding Mos Chitim. He talks there a lot about Matanis Levionim as well, in the context of this whole discussion. It's a fantastic piece over there, in Simen Zayin Erechaim. And based upon the Rambam, I'm not going to take the time to read the Rambam inside, but based upon the Rambam over there in Hilchos Yontiv, he explains that when it comes to every Yontiv, not just Pesach, when it comes to every Yontiv, the requirement to make sure that the poor have what to eat comes from, it's a combination of two chiyuvim. Rav Zsolti says it's a combination of two chiyuvim. Aleph, it's a regular din of tzedakah that applies the whole year. In other words, it's a halach in Yerideya, that a person is poor, he doesn't have what to eat, that whether it's Shabbos, or whether it's Yontif, whether it's Lag B'Omer, you help the guy out. So that's a halach in Yerideya, that's a din in Hilchos Tzedakah, that applies all year. That's one reason why we have to help the poor by Yontif, just like we have to help them all the time. But then, there's a second halacha, and this is the chiddush of Rav Zsolti, based upon his reading of the Rambam, which is fantastic. The second component when it comes to this mitzvah of providing for the poor, particularly by Yontif, not just Pesach, but by the Yom Tovim, is a din, Rav Zsolti writes, in Simchas Yontif. In Simchas Yontif. It's a famous Rambam, but the Rambam says that when it comes to Yontif, when it comes to the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif, if you're just going to eat for yourself, and you're not going to help out the poor, you're not going to have poor people eating with you and taking care of, or at least financially taking care of them, that's not called Simchas Yontif. That's called, you know what he says? Simchas Kreso. It means it's the simcha of your own stomach. Of your own stomach. Israel was just asking me before I came in here, he said, I'm trying to understand, how is it that everybody has something by Kiddush and then they go home for lunch and they have Cholent again? Which is a question that we've all had for many, many years. We were just talking about this. No, I said, so I told him, Tzarech Iyun. It's a very good question. Israel, Tzarech Iyun. It's a big question. So the Rambam says that when you're eating on, if you're eating on Sukkot or on Shavuos or Pesach and you're just enjoying yourself, he says, that's not called Simchas Yontif. You don't worry about the poor. That's called the Simcha of your own belly, of your stomach, Simchas Kreso. So therefore, Rav Zsolti says a fantastic thing. Based upon this Rambam, he says that to provide food for the poor when it comes to Yontif is part of the requirement, your own personal requirement to be yaitz of the mitzvah of what? Of your Simchas Yontif. Now, there are a couple of nafkah minas that will come out from that. Generally speaking, in Hilchos Tzedakah, in Yerideya, Parnosos Atzmo Kodemis Le Parnosos Acherim. I take care of myself before I take care of others. That's the priority, because in Halachas, in Hilchos Tzedakah, in Yerideya, we have a seder of priorities. However, if we say that I'm not myself Yotze with the mitzvah of my own Simchas Yontif, that means it's my own personal priority to see to it that the poor have what to eat, or however that works with providing for that family that I could provide for. The nafkamina would be borrowing money. Generally speaking, I don't have to borrow money to give tzedakah to somebody. If I don't have, I don't have to give tzedakah. I don't borrow money to provide for others. But if I'm not yotze, my own mitzvah of Simchas Yontif, my own personal mitzvah of Simchas Yontif, if I ignore the poor, if I don't help some family with at least a shir, let's say, a suda to eat, then I would be required to borrow. Rav Zsolti says, I would be required to borrow money. That's not in Hilchos Tzedakah. I'd be required to borrow money in order to provide for the poor, for a family, so that I should be able to mekayim my own personal mitzvah of Simchas Yontif. My own personal mitzvah of Simchas Yontif. Comes out that according to Rav Zsolti, the way he understands, is that Mos Chitim is not just a chiyuv in tzedakah, it's a chiyuv as the Makar Chaim learns, it's a tax based upon the Yerushalmi. It's a tax. Kedei, in order to be able to mekayim not only the mitzvah of tzedakah, but to be able to mekayim the mitzvah of simchas achag. And that's why the Ramah brings this, at the beginning of Hilchas Pesach. Now, the question is, based upon the way Rav Zolti learns, since it's a halacha, A, it's a regular halacha in tzedakah, but B, it's a mas, it's a tax, in order to see to it that I can be mekayim my mitzvah of simchas yontif by making sure that others have vatikas. It's not a simcha I'm eating for myself. It has to be other people eating as well, poor people. Then I'm mekayim my mitzvah simchas yontiv. So the question is, then why is that at the beginning of Hilchas Pesach? L'chari, that's the same halacha would be when it comes to Shavuos, when it comes to Sukkot. Should be by every yontiv, because there's a mitzvah simchas yontiv by the Yom Tovim. So it wouldn't be just a halacha in Hilchas Pesach. And in fact, Rav Zolti says, in Chanami, it's by all Yom Tovim. The reason that it's found at the beginning of Hilchas Pesach is because this is the first... This is the beginning of the halachas of the three regalim, where there's a mitzvah of simcha siyantiv midaraisa. But he holds lemaisa ein hachinami, that it's a din that applies to all the yamim tovim, not just maos chita. The reason that we talk about it more is discussed more by Pesach is because, like we learned at the very beginning, the Mishnah Berurah says that generally speaking, it's much more expensive yamtiv, the food and everything is much more expensive, and the mitzvahs are mitzvahs that are connected more to achila. But really, according to Rav Zolti, it applies to all yamim tovim. Now, just hold on 1 second, Moshe. Now, if we say that it's a mas, there's something very interesting that's found in Madani Shlomo from Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zechana Livracha. I mentioned before how in Europe and in the Sephardic Kehillas, wherever Jews lived, the Kehillah had the right, generally it was given to them by the non-Jewish authorities, where the Kehillah was collecting taxes for the needs of the government didn't want to pay for any of that, so the Jews collected their own taxes to help the poor and to help for to take care of the community with all the institutions of the community. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says that bizmanenu, it's hard to say that most chitim, our minig now, like we do here in the shul and in all other places, all other shuls, that our minig now of most chitim of Shlomo Zalman says, it's very hard to say that it's a mas. To say that it's a tax nowadays is, after the Holocaust and the change, the demographic change that have taken place, it's very hard to say that it's a tax, because the only time you could say it's a tax is when there's a kviyus. In other words, when the kehillah sets a certain amount, as I said, they would assess people, and there was a mas always means, in choshe mishpat, a mas means that there's a kviyus. It's set, and there's a set amount, and it's collected by the kehillah. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said that nowadays it's most likely it's just a I guess more of a glamorized din in Hilchas Tzedakah. The important nafkamin would be: can you use money from Isaac Sofim, from your Isaac Sofim? If you keep a cheshbon like that, can you use money from Isaac Sofim to pay for Moshe Chitim? So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says the following: that when it was a mas, when it was a tax, you certainly could not, because it was a chiev in terms of the responsibilities of the individuals vis-a-vis the kehillah. And when it comes to chiyuvim, it's not so poshut. We spoke about that last year at some point. It's not so poshut to use ma'asek sofer money when it comes to such a chiyuv. However, if it's a din in Hilchas Tzedakah, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said there's much more reason to be lenient, and he passes la halacha that you can use the money from ma'asek sofer, that you use the money from ma'asek sofer to give, to provide for ma'os chitim. Yes, Moshe. Correct.
But the problem is,
how do you do that over here? Well, the Rishon talk about that, Yeshtol, because you're right. Otherwise, I would not be Yotzei my mitzvah. So based upon the Ritva that we learned, I would not be Yotzei my mitzvah of Kiddush if I knew that somewhere at the other end of town there was a Jew that wasn't making Kiddush. Or somebody's not eating matzahs, or some poor person someplace I heard about somewhere, so I wouldn't be Mekai my mitzvah. So it's impossible to say such a thing because Ein L'Davar Sof. So how does that work in Pnimius and Nigla and Nistar that presents itself, what presents itself to a person, what he could give, the normal amount that he's able to provide, and so on, based upon his income, based upon what he has, that's a separate discussion. Coming back to the whole reason why Pesach begins, Hilchas Pesach begins with Moshe Chitim, and the Seder Lel Pesach begins with Holach Manya. The Torah brings in Siman Tov Beis, the Torah brings from his brother, Harav Rabbein Yehuda. The Torah brings from his brother of Yehuda that each of the Yom Tovim, everybody's familiar with this, each of the Yom Tovim corresponds to another one of the Ovis. Pesach, which is the beginning of our faith, Pesach, which is when we became Am Yisrael, Pesach corresponds to Avraham Avinu, Vehemen Bashem. Pesach is the Yontiv of Emunah. Pesach, the Rav Yehuda, the brother of the Torah, says Pesach is the Yontiv of Avraham Avinu. Shavuos is Yitzchak Avinu. Sukkos, of course, is Vayovo, Yaakov, Sukkosa. Yaakov is Sukkos. So once we understand that Pesach is the Yontiv of Avraham Avinu, it says in Chumash, Lushi Vasi Ugos, according to Chazal, when he told Sarimena, when the Malachim came to his house, and he says, Lushi Vasi Ugos, Chazal said beferish that Pesach Haya, Pesach Haya, Rashi brings down, it was Pesach. Lushi, in anticipation of the future Geula, there was already a Mitzias of somehow Pesach in the world, and therefore when he said to Sarimena, Lushi Vasi Ugos, he meant matzahs. Rashi says that matzahs, brings from Chazal, it was matzahs. Because why Pesach Haya? It was Pesach. Once we understand that the yontiv of Pesach is Avraham Avinu, and the Jewish people became a people, and we're called Am Elokei Avraham, the whole midah of Avraham Avinu was what? It's Chesed, of course. Chesed Avraham. So that the beginning of Hilchas Pesach is with an act of Chesed, with providing for the poor, and that we begin the Seder Leil Pesach with an invitation to the poor. I think it fits very, very well with that understanding that the Yontiv of Pesach is the Yontiv of Avraham Avinu. Hashem Yisbarach should help us that we should always have what we need, and we should be able to provide for others, and the time will come when no Jew will be lacking, will be no Chosham and Azvachim, and Apsachim and Azvachim, Mir Shem, Begul Hashem, and Mitzvah, 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 and Mitz